Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
This is better than my imagination. This is more than a dream come true. Without the slightest bit of hesitation, I knew what I was meant to do.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome back to, I guess this would be the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. We're doing a little bit of Trek 1701 as well, but we'll put this as a Pop Culture Pub Podcast. My name is Chris Lockhart. I am your host this evening, and this episode, we're calling it Ragnar's Supplemental Episode. Of course, I have Ragnar here. How's it going, Ragnar?
Well, good. Hello, everyone. I'm delighted to have my own episode, finally.
Yeah. Because, unfortunately, due to scheduling and all that kind of stuff, Ragnar had to miss our last episode of Trek 1701, and he's going to be missing our next episode of the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. But he had something to say for both of those episodes, so I was like, well, why don't we just record an episode, and it'll be a supplemental to both of those. So that's what we're doing. That's why we're here. All right, so we're going to start off with Trek 1701. We did an episode recently called The Great Space Questions Discussion. So for this episode, I'm basically just going to be a moderator. I'm going to chime in, and discuss stuff with Ragnar, but my the bulk of my thoughts and everything will be in the primary episode. So this is why this is Ragnar's episode. Because we're getting Ragnar's thoughts on all this stuff. Okay, so my first question to you, Ragnar. Are we alone in the universe?
Are we alone in the universe? There's literally no way that we're alone.
Yeah.
Given the size of the universe, it seems to me to be statistically impossible that we could be the only, I don't know, intelligent or sentient life or just life at all in the universe. Now, are there little green men that come in flying saucers to our planet? That's a much harder question. But given the essentially infinite size of the universe, no way. There has to be other life out there. It might be only bacteria, but there has to be life out there. And in order for life to have evolved on our planet, there's a lot of theories that suggest it started from bacteria that came from space on a meteor, and thus is how our planet and life on it, or not our planet, but how life on our planet began. I'm not a scientist. I don't know for sure, but it certainly sounds plausible to me. So now, would I like there to be little green men in flying saucers? Absolutely. Would it be amazing if we discovered other planets with sentient life on them like you see in Star Trek? That would be incredible. I don't know how likely that is. And I think the big part of that is just the sheer size of the universe. There probably is life like that, but the likelihood of it being close enough or having a technology that would allow it to travel close to us, to me, is the more unlikely part.
Yeah.
But who knows? And maybe down the road, we invent technology that can take us further away, or we encounter a society that has that technology, and perhaps they give it to us, perhaps we steal it from them, perhaps we reverse engineer it, who knows? But yeah, but there's no way that we're the only life in the entire universe. You know, that I don't buy that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, like basically everything you said is exactly almost exactly what I said when we recorded the episode. We're in full agreement on that. But I will suggest to you and to the listeners to go back and listen to that episode that we did for Trek 1701, because Curtis reads a short story called The Egg, written by Andy Weir, who was the guy who wrote The Martian, and it is mind-blowing. Like, okay. It really made me think. It was like, whoa. You know, if that's true, then maybe we are, you know, the only people in the universe, you know?
Mm.
But, yeah, no, it was fantastic. All right. So the next question I have for you is, what would aliens be like? If there are aliens, what are they like?
Oh, man, I mean, there's literally unlimited possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I read, and I did not read this recently, and I don't even remember where I read it, but the thing that I read suggested that the most likely form of life bigger than bacteria that we would encounter would probably be insect-based or closer to what we would describe as insect-based.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact article. This is years ago. But I remember it made a lot of sense, and I think the guy's arguments were basically just, you know, think about our own planet. Through pollution and, you know, overpopulation, we're on a path right now to eventually make our planet uninhabitable. Uninhabitable for human life. There will still be insect life on this planet. And the planet will still survive as a whole. It just, we might make it to the point where we can't live on most of the planet. I mean, places like Australia are already kind of pushing some of those boundaries. The temperatures they get and the drought they get and the fires. Parts of Australia are already getting to that stage where they're not really suitable for human life. Same with many islands in the Pacific where they're essentially going to go underwater in the near future.
Yep.
But Australia will still have insects. Those Pacific planets, well, if they're underwater, they may not have insects, but there'll probably still be some life there, just not human life. So I think that an insect or closer to an insect life is super probable. The other cool theory that I heard, and this is more of a science fiction theory than a, you know, actual scientists putting forth ideas, but I thought it was really cool,
mm-hmm.
was that what we perceive as aliens, i.e. the little gray or green men in flying saucers and those sort of things, are actually humans from the future, and that humanity evolves over time into something like that with a small withered body and a giant head because we use our brains more than our bodies in the future.
Yep.
And that they're traveling back in time. I don't know how plausible that is. Time travel gets super hard on the brain when you start trying to examine it,
mm-hmm.
you know, logically and practically. But at the very least, that is a great concept for a movie.
Yep.
And it's not impossible, just very, very unlikely.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah, like I mentioned on the main episode, I think we're more likely to encounter an alien race that is more like the aliens from Alien than yep. the Vulcans from Star Trek.
I think you're absolutely right. That it just makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, our life as we know it is carbon-based and requires oxygen and water. To the best of my knowledge, and again, I am not an expert in this field,
mm-hmm.
it's theoretically possible for life in other environments to exist not using those building blocks.
Yeah.
So we could also encounter life that is so different from ours that we might even have trouble perceiving it as life.
Yep.
Or it, you know, just is so different from us that we have no actual way of communicating or interacting with it.
Yep.
I think that's quite likely. And then,
yep.
Another thing to think about too is, let's say we did meet an alien race, and let's say they were humanoid and we were able to communicate with them. There's a good chance that our bacteria or our viruses would wipe them out, and an equally good chance that their bacteria and viruses or equivalents would wipe us out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, think about like when the white people came to North America, what it did to the indigenous populations, but on a planetary scale.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, I know when they, like, for example, when they send the Mars rover, they did all sorts of crazy work to make sure that there was no viruses and bacteria present out of that fear of contamination, right?
Yep.
But it's theoretically possible that a little bit of bacteria gets on the Mars rover, survives the trip, and eventually creates life on Mars, you know, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands, however long the time scale is of years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's entirely possible.
Yep.
And, you know, millions of years from now, there could be sentient life on Mars that evolved from bacteria from our Mars rover. Again, that's a great concept for a science fiction book. How realistic it is, I'm not qualified to say, but I would certainly read a book that started out that way.
Yep. So you already kind of touched on it a little bit, but do you believe we have been visited by aliens?
It's so hard to say that. Now, my own father has seen a UFO. And when I say UFO,
mm-hmm.
I don't mean flying saucer man by aliens. I mean something flying in the sky that wasn't a technology he was familiar with, that behaved in a way that nothing we were aware of at the time could do.
Yeah.
He didn't see it on his own. His friends saw it in a separate location at the same time, separately from his experience. Otherwise, he would never have told anyone about it out of fear of just being mocked.
Yeah.
So, could there be an explanation for what he saw? Sure. In my dad's mind, what he saw looked like the lunar lander. In his friend's mind, it looked more like a balloon or a saucer. And my dad is convinced that because his brain couldn't process what he was actually seeing, it filled it in with something similar to what was there.
Yeah.
So, and who knows? It could have been a weather balloon. It could have been an army experiment. There could have been something in the drinking water and they both hallucinated. I don't know. But all I know is that he saw something that he can't explain, and his neighbor also saw something that he can't explain at the same time in the same location. So,
yep.
You know, it would be very hard for me to say, no, there's no chance that we've ever been visited by something that doesn't live on our planet. When I grew up hearing this story from my dad and essentially my uncle, I mean, you know, close family friend. Is there any publicly available concrete proof? Not really. There are a lot of eyewitness accounts. There are some amateur video and photography, which could be argued endlessly either way. So is it possible? Yes. But we just, it's sort of like the Bigfoot thing right now. I want it to be real. That doesn't mean that it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think I want to say I hope so. But there's an equally good chance that if there isn't an alien species that is coming to our planet, there's a pretty good chance they're not coming here for peaceful reasons.
Yeah.
They would most likely be coming for some sort of exploitive reasons, like We're looking for a mineral that your planet has or a resource that your planet has. It seems much more likely than like, oh, we're just explorers and we want to make friends.
Yeah.
But again, an alien culture could be so different in their thinking and mannerisms that, you know, it's so hard to say. A human, if we go to another planet and we discover a less advanced race than us there, it's almost guaranteed we're going to exploit them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what our history has shown us. That's how we behave.
Yep.
But another race coming here might not behave that same way. So it's really hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, it could be like we talked about a little bit. It could be like Star Trek where, you know, they got those duck blind missions where they go to a planet and just mingle in and basically study the planet in secrecy. You know, I think that's possible. Like, you know, they're studying us. For what reason? I don't know. Like, maybe for future conquest, or maybe just to, you know, they're worried about, you know, once we start going into deep space and some or whatever, that what are we going to do when we encounter them? So maybe maybe they're putting some measures in place, you know, kind of like Batman, you know, like when he, you know, that storyline, Tower of Babel, where, you know, basically, Ra's al Ghul was able to take out the Justice League because, he came across Batman's plans on how Batman would take them out, because Batman was like, I might have to take out my comrades at some point. If they go rogue, right? So that could be what's going on. I don't know.
I mean, okay, so let's say that humanity develops technology that allows us to travel space faster and easier than we are currently able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say we went to some of the outer planets in our galaxy, the ones that we know exist but really can't say a whole lot about. Let's say we were able to go there, and let's say that we did discover life there. It's a pretty good bet that we wouldn't immediately try to make contact with that life, but rather would probably try to study it from a safe distance
mm-hmm.
for quite a while before doing anything. First off, we'd want to know if it was a threat. Second off, we'd want to know if it would be poisonous or toxic or any such thing to us.
Yep.
Third off, we would have to try to devise a way to communicate with it that it could also communicate with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd also have the question of, like, should we even interact with it, or would it be better to just leave it alone? So if an alien race came to our planet now, they might do the same thing. Holy crap, we found life. We're not the only planet. It looks like these things are sentient. It looks like they're building things. Doesn't mean we should immediately try to interact with them. You know, might be the safest thing to not do so and to just try to learn about them. So, yeah, it's totally possible that there's something doing that already.
Yep. Yeah, that is really possible. All right, so the next question is theories of space and time. Do you have any space-time theories that you want to share? I don't know, we kind of went on some big tangents with this one, I think. Is time travel possible? How all that works. Do you have any space-time theories out there?
Well, I feel like time travel should be theoretically possible, but I also, it kind of hurts my brain to imagine if it was, the ramifications of it.
Yep.
So I did, a long time ago when I was a kid, I read the book Sphere by Michael Crichton. They made a terrible movie out of it with big name actors, but the book is incredible. And if you haven't read it, I strongly recommend you to do so.
Okay.
And the concept in that book is that in the future, humanity builds a special type of spaceship and travels through a black hole. And what happens when you fly through this black hole is it takes you back through time, which means they end up crash landing on Earth in our time. Well, I mean, the time that the book was written. And of course, they hit an ocean and they sink and they all die. So the story is about the team that the U.S. military or Navy or whatever sends in to investigate this crashed spaceship sitting on the bottom of the ocean. And it's been there for a long time. It's not a new thing. They've just only discovered it now. And I always thought, I have no idea on the science of that, but I always thought, man, that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really knows what would happen if you went through a black hole. My very limited understanding of physics is that you would just get crushed to nothing if you got too close to a black hole. But, again, I don't know enough about such topics to really say. But I always thought that was a really cool concept. Unfortunately, the movie was just dog shit bad. And it's a super shame because, and when you read the book, you'll see, like, man, this could have made such an amazing movie. And I hope that someday somebody buys the rights to it and makes either a made for TV series, like a mini series, or a film out of it, because it's such a shame that it didn't get the royal treatment it deserved. So I think that's my contribution to that.
Yeah, and speaking of films, I know I mentioned this on the episode. H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, I think, is one of the greatest science fiction stories ever written.
Absolutely.
And they did a movie in 2002, which really sucked. They really, if they just followed the book, it would have been so much better.
They've made movies out of that a few times.
Yeah.
And but not really all that great anytime.
No. But the one thing I did like about it was the explanation of, because the reason why the guy builds the time machine in the movie is because his fiance or girlfriend or whatever is killed. So he builds a time machine to go back in time and save her life. So that's what he does. He goes back and saves her, and then she gets killed almost immediately a different way.
Yeah.
So he does it again. He goes back in time again, saves her, and then she dies another way. And every time he saves her, she still dies. So right. So that's why he decides to go to the future, because he wants to learn why he can't change her destiny. And then he finds out the explanation is, you built the time machine because your fiance was killed. If you save her, you'll never build the time machine to go back in time to save her in the first place. It becomes a paradox. So, you know, like, that was the only cool thing about that movie. I was like, oh, that makes sense. But other than that, yeah, it was crappy. And it was too bad, because, I mean, they had Jeremy Irons, they had Guy Pearce.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't that the one with Guy Pearce?
Yeah, they had Samantha Mamba as the elf chick. And I hate when they do that in movies where, I think they're called Elorians, like the elf-like people. And then there's the humans that evolved into monsters, and they're the Morlocks. But in the book, they don't talk like the Elorians or the Morlocks, because the time traveler narrates the entire story, because he's basically the concept is he's reciting it to H.G. Wells, like what's going on or what happened. So I hate it because, you know, they didn't want to do it that way. So they have to have Samantha Mamba talking it didn't make any sense. But anyway, I digress.
One of my two favorite time travel films would be Groundhog Day, which I understand it's not a dude who builds a machine and goes back in time, but it's still a time travel movie because it's about him reliving the same day.
Yep.
And The Butterfly Effect, which, again, is not really a guy who builds a machine. It's he has some weird ability that lets him do these things. But both of those films all really explore the idea of, like, what happens if you actually do it, right?
Yep.
And in the butterfly effect, he's constantly going back to his past and making a different choice, and then it shows you all the ramifications it has on his life. And I thought that was so cool, how they actually explored that. And most of the endings weren't happy, and it's kind of like the more times he went back and changed things, the worse it got.
Yeah.
But it was very – thought it was very well done, and I thought it was a great concept. And it's probably the only thing I've ever seen Ashton Kutcher in that I actually liked him. So
yes, that is true.
I'm like, oh, this guy can actually act. Why doesn't he do that all the time?
Well, and there and the thing with that movie too is like how there's different versions. You know, when he goes back and changes time and stuff. There's actually two versions of that movie.
Yeah.
So the first, the one I watched initially was when he dies. Like he basically goes back to before he was born and basically aborts himself.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I was like, wow, that's depressing. And then it was like years later, I was watching it again, I think with my wife or something. And then it's like a happy ending. I'm like, what the fuck? I don't remember this at all.
So the happy ending is the one that was released theatrically.
Yeah.
The other one was the original ending. And after they finished the film, they showed it to some test audiences. They hated that part where he kills himself in the womb.
Yeah.
And in the States, you know, abortion is this huge deal, this huge controversy. And so it was too close to that. And the film was – the producers were really worried that they'd get abortion and anti-abortion rallies. And so they just – they had to scrap it all.
Yeah.
But if you get the DVD, it has you can choose which ending you're getting.
Yeah, I think that's what happened is I think I must have watched the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never realized that how different it was. Because normally when you get a director's cut, they throw a couple scenes in. Mm-hmm. It usually isn't a drastic change like that. So I never thought to watch the theatrical release. And then, yeah, it was cool. It was like, wow, I thought I was going insane. I'm like... Is this a Mandela effect thing? Like, am I? But anyway, speaking of the Mandela effect, what's your thoughts on the multiverse theory that there's multiple universes that anything that can happen does happen? I threw out the idea that we're all connected to ourselves in some sort of linear way. That we're not aware of, like, and when I say ourselves, like you, Ragnar, are connected to a different Ragnar from another universe, and another Ragnar. So my idea is that, you know, the deja vu, like when you experience deja vu, and you're like, I know I've done this, but I know I couldn't have. That is you remembering something your counterpart did in his universe, or. You know, like sometimes you'll get like a shooting pain in your arm or, you know, your knees just hurt for like a split second. You're like, what the hell was that? Maybe in another universe, you got your knee was broke or, you know, you broke your arm and you're experiencing the pain for a split second. So what are your thoughts on the multiverse theory?
Well, first off, I want to say, Chris, that is an excellent idea for a science fiction book, movie, or television series.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And then my understanding of the universe is that it is infinite in size. And if the universe is infinite in size, it stands to reason that there are infinite possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, that must be true. That at somewhere in the universe, every possibility does in fact exist. But I don't know, that kind of, I heard that argument put forward once and it was torn to shreds. I don't remember the technical details of it. I think my eyes glazed over because it was just way over my head.
Yeah.
I will, however, say that I am super excited about all the Marvel multiverse stuff that's coming our way.
Oh, yeah.
I just finished the second episode of the What If series.
Nice.
And the first episode was cool. The second episode was like 10 out of 10.
Yep.
Fantastic. And, of course, there was a trailer released for the new Spider-Man film, which, you know, we get to see Spider-Man from all three film franchises coming together.
Yep.
And I'm super excited for that and to see where that goes further. So, yeah, that's what I got to say about multiverses.
Excellent. All right, so my next question is, is there a God? Do you, I'm not asking, you know, religion or anything like that, but do you think there is an almighty that created us?
I personally don't. I think that we know too much about science now for that to actually be true. But I love the theory that somebody put forward that there is a being so physically large that, you know, essentially like threw us in a test tube and forgot about us and let us go on our own.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a super cool theory. And I mean, to a certain extent, The Simpsons explored that in the Lisa Science Fair episode. I just feel like we know too much about science now. We know how the Earth was created. We know how life was created. It wasn't a dude in the sky. It was, you know, all these other things.
Yep.
So I don't think that there's like one God that created everything. But that doesn't mean that there isn't spiritual elements interacting with us and our plane of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you're wrong if you're religious. I just think we know too much about science to actually believe like the biblical theory of creation, because it doesn't make sense with what we know now.
Yeah.
And most religions, especially ones that have a God who created the universe kind of thing, are from a time before we had that science. And you had to explain how these things are and were, and that's how they did it. So to that extent, I suppose an argument can be put forward that science is our new religion, and who knows where that's going to take us.
Well, and I never mentioned this on when we did the original episode, so I'll throw it in there. Like, it's speaking of like biblical context, like people got to remember, like the like one of the reasons why I can't fully get behind the Bible is it for years it was transcribed by hand from person to person. Like, there was no printing presses, mm-hmm. you know, and we know, they are pretty sure some of the passages in the Bible have been altered or sections cut out, you know, from mm-hmm. one, from, you know, when it was being transcribed from one person to the next.
Because if you find a really old edition of the Bible, it's totally different, or parts of it are totally different than parts in the current
one. And not just that, but I mean, it was brought together for a political agenda, because I can't remember the Caesar that was in charge. I can't remember if it's Constantine or I can't remember, but basically the Roman Emperor at the time decided to adopt Christianity as the Roman religion, you know, like they were getting rid of the Roman gods, right? Like, they wanted Christianity to be the Roman religion. So, you know, they brought all these holy texts together, and basically they picked and chose what to put into it, to which ultimately became the Bible. So the Bible essentially was brought together for political reasons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why, you know, because I don't really trust politicians. It's, but I mean, all more power to people that, go to church and all that kind of stuff. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever yeah. helps you get you through the day. And if it makes you a good person, that's a good thing.
Yep. So I've studied a fair bit of, the history of the Viking times, which is
mm-hmm.
scholars say it's 793 to 1066. That's not totally accurate. It was longer than that, but
yeah,
that's the classic definition of it. And during that time period, kind of around 1850 onwards, Christianity hit Europe, and all of these small-time kings and warlords and chieftains used it as a way to consolidate power.
Yeah.
Because they basically went, if everybody believes the same system, then we can make them a cohesive whole. As opposed to this town worships Thor, this town worships Odin, and they'll never get along because it's cats and dogs.
Yeah.
If they all follow Jesus, they can use it to consolidate power. And reading about that, and I mean, the Christianity of that time period is much more akin to the radical Islam we see in select parts of the Middle East now. It was very misogynistic. It was women lost all of their rights. Women were the devil. All of society's problems were about women. And there was a lot of brainwashing that went along with it. So it's hard for me to believe that you know, a religion that started 500 years or however many years before that morphed into that and then morphed into what we see now, that could be the only thing out there. If it changes so much, that doesn't quite make sense to me. But religion is fascinating. And I think for humanity, a huge part of its fascination will always be that we just will never definitively know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that will, because of that, even in the most scientific, analytic thinkers we have, there's always that tiny little shadow of like, well, it's not impossible.
Yep.
And so because of that, I don't think humanity will ever not have religions, but hopefully they'll continue to morph into less extreme, less violent, more equal and fair religions as humanity continues.
Agreed. Yep. All right. So my next question is, what happens after death? Because, I mean, death comes for us all. You know, we're all going to die at some point. What do you think happens to us when we die?
Well, I would love to believe that there's, you know, a heaven or whatever equivalent your religion or spiritual beliefs have. But again, we know so much about science. I'm pretty sure when you die, that's just it. You're just gone. That's it. I love the concept of reincarnation, where when you die, you then come back to do things over again. You know, so if you've done bad things in your life, when you come back, you're a lesser form and you have to work your way back up. And if you've done good things, you can move into a better form. I think that's a super great concept. Unfortunately, I'm pretty sure when you die, that's just it. The light goes out and your consciousness no longer exists. And that is not a super comforting thought. So I'm happy to say that most people don't share that belief with me.
Well, I know my grandma, that's what she thinks. She thinks, you know, just you're gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know, like myself, I subscribe to reincarnation. I really think that is what happens to us. I think there's more to the universe than we realize. And I think our souls, you know, like once we die, we basically come back at some point. And I really, I call myself an aspiring Buddhist because I really like the Buddhist ideals. The only thing with Buddhism that I have a hard time with is meditating, and you're supposed to respect all life, you know. So if there's a mosquito on you, you're not supposed to swat it if you're a Buddhist. You're supposed to let it drink your blood. I have a hard time with that. I swat mosquitoes. But, you know, I do like the idea of reincarnation. I do, you know, and karma. You know, if you do good in your life, you know, it'll be reflected. You know, if you do bad, you know, and I mean karma, you know, some people don't believe in karma because they say, well, you know, that so-and-so has been a rotten SOB all his life, and you know, only good things have ever happened to him, and he's, you know, he's been, you know, such a bad person. And it's like, yeah, but karma, because Buddhism believes in reincarnation, will affect you in the next life if it doesn't affect you this life. That's why I think in our life, like, sometimes bad things happen to good people. And you're like, why? Like, why would, you know, that, but maybe, you know, in a previous life, that person did something really bad, and now karma's come back to get them.
I like it.
But, that's what I like to think. I really do think I've been reincarnated before. I think, you know, previous lives, and I threw the theory out there, with the guys that, I think that's why, we have, homosexuality, is because, you know, like, say it's a guy who's gay, maybe in a previous life he was a woman, and maybe he just remember, you know, his soul is so ingrained with his previous life that in this life he's attracted to men, because he was attracted to men as a woman in his previous life, you know? So I'm thinking that, like, that explains why, because I really believe if you're gay, it's not a learned behavior, it's who you are. Like, you're born that way. Like I grew up with a guy that is gay, and I mean, from the time we were little kids, I knew, like, he was, you know, I knew it. Like, I just knew. And that's who he was. He didn't, like, just decide, well, you know, I'm going to be like this. No, that's who he is. So anyway, that's my theory of why reincarnation's real. Okay, so the last question for the big, the great big space questions is, do you think we'll ever leave our solar system?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I like your theory of reincarnation there. And yeah, I'm in agreement. Like, I don't think gay people is a learned behavior. I think if you're attracted to, like, what you're attracted to, I think you're kind of born with. I think your behavior could be shaped to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
If you grow up in a household that is, say, homophobic, you might try not to be attracted to the same sex, or you might not act on it.
Yeah.
Or you might hate yourself for it. But I think at the end of the day, you're born a certain way, and this is what you like. And
yep.
I think that's just how it is. And there's, if you go through human history of as far back as we have records for, there were gay people in all cultures. There were transgendered people in all cultures. They didn't have surgeries and stuff the way we do now, but There's examples of people being born and feeling they were the wrong gender, and there's examples of people, you know, having sexual relations with the same gender, and people having sexual relations with both genders. And also there's evidence of the Romans having sex with animals too. So, you know, I think humanity has kind of always been the same. The technology has just gotten better.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, we can move on to the Indiana Jones discussion. So, Ragnar, first up, what are your earliest memories of Indiana Jones? I'm assuming you're a fan, because...
Oh, absolutely.
So, what are your earliest memories? When did you first watch Indy?
I probably first watched Indiana Jones when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, probably somewhere in that. We would have rented it from a... you know, video rental store.
Yep.
Perhaps even a Blockbuster, although I think we mostly went to the independent place inside Save-On Foods, but whatever.
Okay, yeah.
And the first one I ever saw was Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it was incredible. I'd never seen anything like that. Blew my mind. Still does when I watch it now. It holds up very well. And I loved it. I also, as a kid, I had a Nintendo, and one of the few games I had was Temple of Doom.
Nice.
And so Temple of Doom is not my favorite of the original three films.
No.
But
no.
It always has a soft spot in my heart because I played the video game so much, it made me want to watch the movie more than the other two. in the hopes that maybe I would, you know, be able to figure out the game or something.
Yeah.
Of course, going back as an adult and playing that same game, it's so simple. There's no twists and turns and plot holes and things like that. Watching the movie won't help you play the game, but, you know, yeah. as a kid, you thought, well, maybe there's a riddle I'll solve by watching the movie or something. So, yeah, I loved it. I thought the original three films were incredible. I did not, as a kid, watch the young Indiana Jones. I wish I had of. I yeah. knew they existed. I just, yep. at that time, had no way of actually securing a copy to watch. I've seen a few of them as an adult. They were pretty good. And I think as a kid, if I'd seen those, they would have just been, you know, top notch.
Yeah, Young Indiana Jones, yeah, I never, like, I think I watched the first one, but then I kind of fell out of it when it was initially airing, and I keep looking for it. Like, I'm hoping, like, Netflix or Disney Plus will put them on there, because there are some good actors. Like, I know Daniel Craig was in an episode.
They had tons of big name.
Oh, what's her name?
Big name actors appear in it.
Yeah, and it looked really good.
Or maybe at the time they weren't big name actors, but actors who went on to become yeah. names were in it.
Yeah.
Now I will also say I did not like the fourth Indiana Jones movie particularly well.
No.
And I'm because of that I'm really uncertain about the new one that's coming out. Initially, my initial reaction was like, "Oh, sweet, a new Indiana Jones movie." Then I remembered the Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
And then I went, well, we'll have to see.
Yeah. So what was it about the Crystal Skull that took you out of it? I'm in full agreement. I just want to see what your thoughts are on it.
There's a few elements I didn't like. I thought the bit at the beginning with him hiding in the fridge from the nuclear explosion was clever. But it was almost like they went a little too far.
Yes.
It was almost a little too far-fetched. I thought Indy, as a grumpier old man, was great. I would love to see them explore that more. Have him be put in situations where he's like, I can't physically do this. I can't beat that guy in a boxing match. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I would have whooped him, but I'm an old man now. I liked that. I'd love them to explore that part more.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Ford has aged pretty well, and I was really happy to see him as Indy again. I wasn't super crazy about the whole he has a kid now, because it felt like they're going to try to set it up that now his kid is the star of the films. I had the impression that nobody else really liked that element either, and that they're probably not going to bring back Shia LaBeouf for the next film.
Yeah, I didn't like it either, and as far as I know, he's not in the new film.
Mm-hmm. I did love that they brought back
Karen Allen. Yeah.
Karen, yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Yep.
I was super stoked that they did that. My other big issue, or another complaint I had, was Cate Blanchett is one of the best actresses in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably the only film I've ever seen her in where she sucked.
Yeah.
You got to work pretty freaking hard to make an actress of that talent level suck.
Mm-hmm.
Her accent wasn't convincing. She wasn't a scary villain. She was very cartoonish. And Indy's had some incredibly great villains, and she wasn't one of them. And that is just heartbreaking. Because I don't think I can think of another film that she's appeared in that she wasn't in, like, 10 out of 10 in.
Yeah, like, I wish they would have just had her use her, like, English accent or you know, her American accent. Because, yeah, her Russian accent was not good.
No, it's terrible.
And, I mean, Russians do employ, you know, British and American people. So, it makes sense she's just an agent for the USSR.
Yep. That would have been way better.
But yeah, it did feel a little bit like Rocky and Bullwinkle, you know, like
those
those two characters there.
I also thought a lot of the action sequences, they just didn't pack the wallop that the sequences in the old films did.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of that is they did a lot of it with CGI, whereas the old films, where most of it was done in camera, not behind the scenes.
Exactly, yep.
And I actually read an awesome book written by the stuntman, by Indy's stunt double. And I apologize, I don't remember his name off the top of my head. A two-second Google search will bring it up. And he's gone on to become a second unit director and then ultimately a film director on his own, as well as running a company that trains stuntmen and does all the stunts for all sorts of people.
Mm-hmm.
But his book about being Indy's stunt double was incredible. And all the stories and all the way they did stuff and all the times he nearly died. It's a fascinating read. And if you like Indiana Jones, I would definitely recommend searching out his book because it was really cool. And at that time in his life, he looked like Harrison Ford. They show the photos. Here's me in Indy's costume and here's Harrison Ford in Indy's costume. And it's very convincing. They didn't have to put makeup on this guy to make him look like Harrison Ford. He looked like Harrison Ford. So that was a super bonus for everyone involved. But I just felt like in the new film, the stunts didn't pack that punch. They seemed like, oh yeah, it's all CGI and it's kind of hokey and no one's actually going to get hurt. And the stakes aren't particularly high. We know Indy's going to win, huh? You know, like I don't know. It didn't catch me the way those old films still do. And then all the crap with the aliens it was crap. We've seen better things done in worse movies, and it just, to me, the whole thing just, I don't know. I don't know if it was worth bringing him out of retirement for that.
I fully agree. Like, with the too much CGI, another thing, like, I'm not a Shia LaBeouf fan. I really think they should have had somebody else play his son, because he's just a douche.
Yeah.
So there was that. There was when he was swinging from vines and stuff and they were doing the Tarzan yell. I'm like, oh my God, no. Like, you didn't just do that. And then, them going through the jungle, like, they have that big machine, which was cool with the saw and it's cutting down trees.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still stumps, you know, like, you're just cutting down part of a tree. Like, it would still be a rough ride.
Yeah.
Like, I would have preferred if they had just said there was a road, you know, in this part of the jungle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that would have made more sense. But, yeah, they relied way too much on CGI, and it really felt... It felt more like a Star Wars prequel movie.
Yeah. Because... You got all the right elements.
Yeah.
You got some great actors. You got a huge budget. But you just didn't make magic with it.
Yeah, well, I because George Lucas, of course, was involved with this, and it was Steven Spielberg directing, but I think, you know, Spielberg was too influenced by George, and George was like, well, you know, we could just do this on a soundstage. I did it for the prequels, and it feels like you're on a soundstage. It doesn't feel like you're in the Amazon.
And, I mean, part of the original concept with the Indiana Jones films was that George and Steven were bringing back movies based on movies they grew up watching.
Yeah.
Old action movies mixed with old comics and old pulp fiction novels.
Yeah.
The stuff that they read as a kid. The new film didn't feel like that was where the source material came from. The new film felt like, well, it's the 2000s now, so we have to make this film reflect that.
Yeah.
I think that was part of the problem, was that those old films, they came out in the 80s, but in a way they were throwbacks to movies that came out in the 40s and even the 30s, and that the new film just didn't feel that way, even though it's set in the 50s. It didn't have that feel to it for me.
And, like, the space part of it, I actually didn't mind, because... Like, they were going for, like, because in the 50s, like, space, you know, it came from outer space. Those type of movies were big. So I know that's what they were going for, which I was cool with. But again, it was just too much CGI. Like, it looked fake. It felt fake. But, you know, like with this new movie coming out, from what I've heard, like it's not Spielberg directing. I think Spielberg's producing.
Oh, I'm sure him and George are involved.
Yeah.
It is their baby.
Yeah, and it's a different director. I can't remember the name of the director, but apparently he has been quoted as saying, like, he's going back to basics. Like, you know, like, they're not doing CGI, like, they're not relying on CGI like they did on Crystal Skull. Like, they are actually out filming. And Harrison Ford is actually doing a lot of his stuff. And actually, like, because he broke something recently, a few weeks ago. Like, they had to stop production. But I mean, that just goes to show, like, he's trying, you know, like.
Well, and to throw back to what I was telling you about that the book written by the stuntman, this was an ongoing thing. Was that the stuntman kept having to argue with Harrison, like, let me do this part. It's very dangerous. You could get hurt, and that will throw off the whole movie.
Yeah.
And Harrison was like, no, I want to do it. It'll look better if I do it. And it was they didn't fight about it. They were friends.
Yeah.
But it was always an issue where Harrison was like, I want to do the stunts because it's more authentic and it'll make a better film, which I totally agree with. But also, like, yeah, if he gets seriously hurt, that's the end of production. For further reading, see The Crow.
Yeah.
Right? Guy got shot, died. Mm-hmm. They had to remake the whole movie to incorporate what they had shot into a film. So, you know, that's why you should use a stunt double, you know.
Yeah, Brandon Lee.
Hmm.
Yeah,
it's tragic. But
it is, yeah. It makes you wonder, like, what his career would have been like.
Because
he was in a movie. Oh, I can't remember was he with Dolph Lundgren, or he was like in a cop buddy movie that I really liked. I can't remember what it's called now. It was either with Dolph Lundgren or like Kurt Russell or someone like that. And it was right before he started filming The Crow. But yeah, really tragic. But like, I know the one picture I saw from Indiana Jones 5 was Indy in his outfit and Toby Jones. I really like Toby Jones.
And he you know, he's a great casting choice for the Indiana Jones universe.
Yep.
Like, I saw the set picture, probably the same picture you saw, and I was like, oh, that could be out of one of the old ones for sure.
Yep.
Like, for sure. So I think that is a good sign.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm going to go see this film for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a question of if I'm going to see it a second time or if I'm going to see it once, like the Crystal Skull, and never bother again.
Well, the thing with the Crystal Skull, I will say, because my kids were a lot younger when that came out, like my son would have been 7, my oldest daughter would have been like 5. They really enjoyed it. Like, it really was a kid-friendly film. Like, and my wife really enjoyed it, too. But, I mean, for the diehard indie fans, like, it's definitely bottom of the list. Like, if I'm going to rank them, you know, it definitely goes Raiders, Last Crusade, Temple of Doom, Crystal Skull.
Yep.
but with this new one, I like the fact that, you know, they're not ignoring the passage of time. Like, you know, like, this takes place during the 60s.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic. And I think I mentioned it before where the bad guy in the movie, who I think is an ex-Nazi, because apparently there are scenes, someone saw them filming and they were using, like, Nazi colors and Nazi uniforms and stuff. So from the theory is that the next movie, there'll be a flashback scene where you will see the bad guy of the movie in Indiana Jones, because they can do that now where they can de-age people, you know, fighting during World War II. And then this is like, whatever, 20 years later, 25 years later, you know, he encounters him again. I think it's Mads Mikkelsen. I think that's his name.
That's going to be great.
Yeah, he was Hannibal in the Hannibal series.
Oh, I know who Mads Mikkelsen is. He's one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, so. He's great. And his brother, I want to say his brother's Lars Nicholson. He's going to be Grand Admiral Thrawn in the live-action
That's right.
Star Wars.
That's right.
Because he was Grand Admiral Thrawn in the Star Wars Rebels.
And I'm super happy that they cast him to, you know, similar to how they cast Rosario Dawson.
Yes. Yep.
Right. Like that. I like that they're doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mads Mikkelsen is awesome. His Hannibal was incredible. He's in Doctor Strange. He's in Casino Royale. He's an incredible actor.
He was in Rogue One. He was.
Yes. He's. Oh. The whole movie hinges on what he did. The whole Star Wars franchise hinges on the stuff that he did in Rogue One, if you think about it.
Yeah, he designed the Death Star.
And made that tiny little flaw.
Yep.
Yeah. He's a great actor in any role, but mm-hmm. he is a particular great villain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what mm-hmm. he brings to this movie. Especially if he's playing like a Nazi, you know, because I got to say, like, they do make good villains.
Yeah, and especially in the Indiana Jones world. Like,
yep.
Temple of Doom is great, and I love it. But the other two films are, of the original three, the other two films are so much better because of the Nazis.
Yep.
Because it's like, oh, they're Nazis? They're automatically villains. We automatically hate them, and we automatically want you to do horrible things to them.
Yep.
Like, it, you know... There's not a lot of, I guess what I'm getting is with Nazis as your villain, there's not a lot of gray area. We don't sympathize with them. We just hate them and they're bad.
Yeah.
And it works because normally that lack of dimension would be a bad thing, but in this case, it's not.
Yeah. Did you realize, and you probably did, for years, I didn't realize that Temple of Doom is actually a prequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It's set before the other two.
Yeah, it's set in 1935, and Raiders is 1936.
Yeah.
For years, I didn't realize that until I think, in the early 2000s, when they re-released them on VHS.
Yeah.
I was re-watching it, because prior to that, I'd never owned Temple of Doom. So, like, the only time I'd see it was, like, if it was on the movie channel or, you know, on a regular channel. And I think I always missed that part where it tells you the year. So when I bought the videotape and I'm watching, I'm like, what? I'm like, this is a prequel? Mm-hmm. Huh. And I mean, that was, Phantom Menace had just come out like a year before that. So prequels in my mind were kind of a new concept, and here they did it in the 80s and they snuck it in, and most of us didn't even realize it.
I remember watching those films as a kid, not the first time I saw them, repeat views, and my mom saying this one, Temple of Doom, is set before the other two.
Yeah.
So, and I remember that being like, oh, okay. Wonder why they didn't shoot them in that order, but didn't really matter. And I think their idea with the films was just to be, these are stories about a character, and the chronological order doesn't really matter.
Yeah. The only thing that I think is ballsy on their part is if you're watching this in the movie theater for the first time back in 1984, and you see it's 1935, and you know Raiders takes place in 36, then you know Indy's in no danger.
That's a very good point that I didn't make at the time, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're right. If you find out this one is set the year, yeah, you're right.
I mean,
the other characters aren't. Yeah,
yeah.
That doesn't mean all the other characters aren't in peril.
And speaking of the other characters, I just seen on Facebook the other day, Short Round just turned 50.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, hey?
Yeah. But I mean, Harrison's like almost 80, so... Yeah, no time for love.
One of the best lines.
We
still quote that line in my family's house.
I wish, I'm kind of fingers crossed hoping they bring him back in this new movie.
Oh, God, wouldn't that be awesome?
You know, even if it's just a throwaway scene where, like, he works at the university that Indy works at.
Oh, man, that'd be awesome. And they could also bring back Sully.
Yeah, Solo.
By John Davis.
Yeah.
He's still alive. He still acts. There's no reason why they couldn't bring him back.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they do. Like, in the last movie, it kind of made sense because his character lives in Africa. Egypt.
Yeah.
So, you know, and Crystal Skull took place in South America. So if this movie, you know, hopefully takes place in Europe, because I mean, if the Nazis are involved, I'm assuming it must be somewhere near Germany or something. Maybe, you know, he can show up, the lend a hand. Because, yeah, I love him. He's a great actor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if they do, they do. They don't, they don't. But I don't want them to shoehorn him in. I want, if it fits the plot and it makes sense, I'd love to see them.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't want them to do it. I don't want them to do like what J.J. Abrams did with the third Star Wars sequel, where he just shoehorned in the Emperor and all of these other famous characters just to make the fans not hate it. Because it was like, this is stupid.
Yeah,
and,
agreed.
I mean, is it cool to see the Emperor again? Yeah, but it was also stupid as hell.
Yeah.
So I don't want them to do something like that. But if they can make it so that it does make sense and is fitting and suiting, oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm hoping Karen Allen shows up. I'm hoping they're still married.
Yeah, and I mean, you could also have Shia LaBeouf show up, just kill him right away.
Actually,
make that the opening sequence. Mads Mikkelsen is an old retired Nazi, kills Indy's son, and then Indy has to get revenge. That'd be a friggin' great movie.
Yeah, that would be like if, and I don't think they could get Shia LaBeouf to do this because I don't know what's going on with that guy, but yeah, you could kill him off screen, you know. Prior to the start of the movie. Sure.
Yeah,
excellent. So do you have any more thoughts about Indiana Jones you want to throw out there? Because we covered the movies, the TV show, the upcoming movie.
I think we've covered it all. They're great, and I have seen the original three many, 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 many times. And whenever I rewatch them, I still love them. I still think they're great. I still think they're very well done. And as a whole, they still hold up wonderfully.
Excellent. All right. Well, before we end this episode, let's do our brain candy segment. So this is the segment where we discuss something that we're watching, reading, whatever. It's brain candy. And typically we'll give it a pick or a pan, depending on and if we liked it or not. So, Ragnar, do you got anything for brain candy this week?
Well, I mean, I watched the second Marvel's What If episode 3 days ago, and I haven't stopped thinking about it.
Excellent.
So, for me, that's a pick. I will not discuss it because it would be impossible to discuss it without spoiling it for someone. I will simply say you need to have watched all of the Avengers films, specifically the Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2, Infinity Wars 1 and 2, and Black Panther to appreciate that episode. And if you haven't seen those films, don't even bother with the episode because it won't have the same wallop. And then I also got to say I finished the MODOK series, season 1.
Nice.
And I loved it.
Yep.
I didn't love it immediately. It took a little while. I didn't hate it immediately. I just was like, well, okay, this is sort of exactly what I thought it would be.
Yep.
And then as the episodes went on, then they started going off in different ways and doing things I wasn't expecting. And by the end, I was like, man, I want to watch more of this.
Yep.
I wish that they could have got Robert Downey Jr. to voice Iron Man. That would have totally made it incredible for me. But I loved all the parts where Iron Man just kicks the snot out of MODOK.
Yeah. and that the voice actor is actually John Hamm, who does Iron Man.
Oh, was it? Yep. Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're not going to get Robert Downey, at least they got John Hamm. I love John Hamm.
Yeah. But I mean, I love Robot Chicken to death, and watching that hokey animation style done in the MODOK universe was incredible.
Yep.
And I loved it. So I think it's great. I've been telling all my friends to watch it. So those are the two things I've watched recently that I'm definitely was into.
Yeah, I really, Yeah, I really loved MODOK. It made me laugh. Nathan Fillion was Wonder Man.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. It was so reminiscent of his role as Captain Hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, this is great. This is so great. And I loved the bit where, you know, young MODOK, who we're going to call Evil MODOK, you know, clones his family, and you have to figure out who's real and who's not. Yep. And they get down to there's two sons left, and they're just like, yeah, we'll just keep both.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the series, he now has two sons.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. No, I loved it. It was well written, well acted, and for the voice actors, and it was funny, and the visual style was crude and yet really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, that's a pick for me, and I can't wait to see where they take it from here.
Yeah. As far going back to talking about What If, I just saw episode 3 yesterday. It was good.
It's already out. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I know what I'm doing as soon as I get off the computer with you.
Number 2 was definitely my favorite, but number number 3 was good, but the last 5 minutes, I don't know. Okay. I'm interested to see what you think.
All right, I'll let you know. I kind of had a feeling when I saw episode 2. I got this weird feeling that this maybe they should have saved for the end, cuz this episode might just be untoppable.
Well, apparently because the big thing with, and this isn't giving anything away, Chadwick Boseman comes back to voice T'Challa. Like, yeah. I was saying T'Chaka. That's his dad, right? T'Chaka? T'Challa?
Yeah, I think T'Chaka's it. T'Challa's definitely him anyways.
But anyway, he comes back to voice him. Apparently he's, for this season of What If, he's in 4 episodes.
Oh,
cool. So it's not the last we've seen of T'Challa in cool. What If. So that is really cool. And then I also read today that apparently from episode 1, Captain Carter, she's going to physically be in the next Doctor Strange movie, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Which I have a feeling is going to pick up exactly where the next Spider-Man movie lets out.
Yes.
Like I don't know for sure, but I got a feeling that those two are going to be very intimately connected.
Well, that's what, what's his name said? Kevin Feige said, WandaVision, Loki, the new Spider-Man movie, and Doctor Strange are all connected.
Huh.
And then What If is being shoehorned in there too. Because like I said, we haven't seen the last of Captain Carter. And we apparently will be seeing Hayley Atwell as that character in the next Doctor Strange movie.
Hmm.
So I'm pretty excited about that because I love her.
That's a lot of excitement coming up.
Yeah, I think she's fantastic. I love, and they did an Agent Carter series.
They did. Yeah, I didn't watch it, but
yeah, I think it is on Disney Plus. I recommend watching it. I loved it. I thought it was great. You know, she's such a great actress. And you know, it's just too bad it got canceled, you know, when it did. But Marvel kind of, like, back then they were getting, you know, they were doing these, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, the Netflix stuff, how it was all going to tie into the movies, and then they kind of were like, no, actually it's not. And then, you know, like, now the Disney Plus stuff ties into the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, from what I understand, is Kevin Feige was not in control of the TV properties like Agent Carter and all them. So he had no say in what they actually did, but these new ones he does. But apparently, like, Charlie Cox as Daredevil is going to be in the next Spider-Man movie. And they are talking about bringing Jon Bernthal as the Punisher into the MCU. I could see him being in the Blade movie. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah. I gotta say, something that I'm really appreciating about the Marvel movies, and we're just seeing more and more of this as time goes on, is the interconnectedness between characters.
Yep.
Some of my big complaints, for example, Iron Man 3, one of my biggest complaints was, where the fuck is the rest of the
Avengers? Yeah.
Why do, like, I understand they don't, you know, they don't want the hero to call them because he's got to solve his own problems. But I needed at least a plausible reason of why he didn't get anybody to help him, or didn't, or nobody else came running when shit started going crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And pretty much from that film onward, then they started doing that. They started having the characters interact in each other's films. Like, for example, Thor 3, the Hulk is essentially the co-star of the movie.
Yep.
And I think that's great, because that's how the comics were. The characters, they interlap. They appear in different issues, and not always as a co-star. Sometimes it's just a bit part or a cameo or a small appearance. But it makes it so much more believable, and I just love it. So
yep.
I'm really stoked that they're doing more and more and more of that. And I think as time goes on, it's just going to get better and better on that front.
Yep, agreed. So yeah, coming up with Marvel, you got Shang-Chi that's coming out in next week, I think.
And that I'm really on the fence on that one, because I watched the trailer and, man, it doesn't look very good. Everyone is like, there's a lot of buzz about it.
Well, the thing with Shang-Chi,
I don't know, man.
He was never like a big character in Marvel Comics. Like, he was around. Like, basically, Shang-Chi and Iron Fist were essentially created because of the kung fu craze that happened in the 70s. But Iron Fist has kind of overshadowed Shang-Chi.
Okay.
But because of the Netflix series, I don't know if they're allowed to, or they weren't allowed to use Iron Fist or whatever.
Okay. So, well, and also he sucked ass in the Netflix series.
Yeah, well, I liked what's his name, the actor who played him.
Oh, I don't think that was the problem.
It definitely wasn't. Sucked. Yeah, it was the writing and the choreographing. Like, I mean, this guy's supposed to be the greatest martial artist on the planet, and you know, I see better martial arts on Arrow than I did on Iron Fist.
Yeah.
But that being said, Shang-Chi never really was that popular, but I think they're retconning some stuff. Like, apparently, like, the bad guy of the movie is going to be the actual Mandarin, not the one we saw in Iron Man 3.
That's right.
Who I think is his dad. And, you know, the thing of it is, like, I remember back in the day when they announced Guardians of the Galaxy. And I remember, because it was like the first podcast I ever recorded, and we were talking about it. And I remember saying, like, this is going to be terrible. You know, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, there's so many other better comics they could be adapting. But boy, was I wrong.
But also, when you looked at it on paper, it sounded terrible.
Yeah. And
if somebody out of context, if somebody told you what it's about and the plot and the characters, you would look at them and be like, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have worked, which is part of why it was so good.
Yep.
Is that it really shouldn't have worked, but it did.
So, yeah, I'm hoping that's what Shang-Chi is. Like, I'm hoping it's going to be that same scenario.
I hope so too, man.
And I really, like, they really made it this way for the Chinese audience, like, you know, because the Chinese market is huge.
Oh, it's almost bigger than the American one.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, they're doing this, and they got some good actors. Like, the guy who plays Shang-Chi is Canadian. Like, so yeah. I'm pretty excited about that.
And I hope that he's good in the movie, and I hope that the movie does well, because the buzz going in is that this is going to launch his whole career as a film superstar. Actor, martial artist.
Yep.
And of course, the opposite is true too. If the movie isn't very good or isn't received well, his career's done.
Yeah.
And that'd be a real shame. But we'll see. All I'm going in on is the trailer I watched didn't look very exciting. I didn't watch that trailer and be like, man, I gotta see that movie. I watched the trailer and I'm like, this doesn't look that great.
Yeah. So I'm hoping maybe they didn't put the best stuff in the trailer.
Yeah.
But speaking of trailers, they released a new Eternals trailer.
Oh, I didn't see it.
It looked a lot better. Like with the first trailer, I'm like, you know. But now this new trailer actually makes it look a lot better. And I mean, man, it's gonna, because we've got Shang-Chi, you know, coming up early September. We got the Eternals in November. We got Spider-Man 3 at Christmas time.
Yeah. Well, the movies I'm excited for this year that are still to come out would be that Ghostbusters movie that was supposed to come out 2 years ago.
Yep.
The new Spider-Man movie and Dune.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the three that I'm like, I might actually go to the theaters, even if I have to wear a mask, I might go for those three films.
Yeah.
Because those are three films that I am super stoked about, that all signs are pointing to are going to be mind-blowingly good.
Yeah, me too. Yep.
Yeah. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff coming out, but just those are the big three for me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, hopefully, yeah, we can go to the theater, or they'll do the Disney premium thing again. I guess they're not doing that for Shang-Chi. You can watch it on premium, I think, 45 days after it's released.
Right.
But then it's only like 60 days until it's released on Blu-ray. So, like, why would you, you know, unless it's super cheap to, you know, but I'm not paying $30 to watch a movie 30 days or 45 days after it's released.
No.
No way.
I'm using somebody else's Disney account, and so far every time a big movie has come in, they've paid for it.
Hmm.
So I'm hoping that they just do that again and I can watch it for free.
Yeah.
And I'd be totally willing to chip in $5 if they said, hey, there's like 8 people that use this account. If y'all chip in a couple bucks, we can watch this.
Yeah.
I'd be down. I'm not going to shell out $30 to watch it at home, though.
No.
There's just not even, like, I think Dune is probably the movie I'm the most excited for. I'm not going to shell out $30 to watch it at home.
No.
Like, I'm just not doing that.
Well, and a movie like that, I mean, if you, like, the only reason why I would shell it out is if I couldn't go to the theater. Like, if our, you know, if we're locked down again.
And you're right. I should add that caveat. If the theaters are not open, which is a strong possibility, then I might do it just out of sheer boredom.
Yeah. But, I mean, if I can go to the theater, I'm definitely going to go to the theater. Especially a movie like Dune. Like, you got to see that on the big screen.
And all the trailer looks incredible. The buzz is incredible.
Yep.
The guy who directed it, I mean, I like what he's done before. And the cast is really solid. So,
yep.
All signs are pointing to this is going to be great. And I've read the book, only the first one, but I have read the book. I loved it. I did not particularly love the previous film adaptation. It's not horrific. It has some good parts, but as a whole, well, you can kind of tell that the guy didn't read the book first.
Yeah, David Lynch, yeah.
He just sort of did his own thing.
And I mean, they had some good actors. Like, I think Kyle MacLachlan was good in that film.
Yeah, he's the main character, and Patrick Stewart's in it. And
Dean Stockwell.
And Sting.
Yep.
And it's not a bad movie at all. It's also not a great movie.
No, and the special effects definitely don't hold up.
No.
Which is crazy, because you'd think, I mean, it came out after Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
And the Return of the Jedi special effects, before they were tampered with by George Lucas, still held up.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I do have a VHS box set of the original three films, remastered, non-special edition for sale.
Nice.
Yeah.
I did.
They're now available on DVD and on others. I think you can watch the non-special editions on Disney Plus, I'm pretty sure. But for a long time, they were really hard to find.
Yeah. I used to have them, but I think we had a leak in the basement, and the box it was in got destroyed. So it was, like, moldy and stuff. So I was like, oh, man. Plus, I don't have a VHS player anymore. That, so.
I still do have a working VHS player, because I have a few movies that I don't have any other way of watching them.
Yeah, but, yeah. I kept a few videotapes, but I don't actually watch them.
Yes. I'd say it's maybe once a year I actually hook the VCR up and watch something. And that's usually somewhere in January when it's too cold to go outside. Last year we were also in lockdown.
Yep.
And it's like, man, there's really not much to do, and I'm getting pretty tired of doing all the things I've been doing. Oh, I'll dig out some VHS movies. So.
Yep. Nope, that's a perfect time. Yeah. All right, well, I guess we could call this an episode. So before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Ragnar, where can we find you, sir?
Well, RagnarTheTrader.com is my main website. There's links in there to purchase my products as well as to see if there are any upcoming trade shows I'll be at. With the caveat that, well, I have shows booked through all across Western Canada going all the way up to Christmas. The way things are looking with COVID, I'm not exactly confident that I'll actually be at all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you live in Western Canada and you want to come see me at a trade show, pick the ones that are happening sooner as opposed to later, because they're probably more likely to happen.
Yeah.
And it really bums me out. I love doing trade shows. And not just because I make money at them, but because I love interacting with people. I love mm-hmm. telling them about my products and why I made it and how I made it and how you can use it, and just shooting the shit about pop culture or Viking history or whatever.
Yep.
So it bums me out, but the reality is this COVID stuff is still with us, and it's looking very likely that we'll be facing lockdowns again this winter.
Yeah.
So anyways, the website's always open. I'm also on Etsy, and you can follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook as Ragnar the Trader.
Excellent. Yeah, fingers crossed. I'm hoping to see you again at the Edmonton Expo.
Me too, man. Me too.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see.
But all right, well, we will call this an episode. This was our Ragnar supplemental episode. My name is Chris Lockhart, and this is Ragnar. And we want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. And we will see you again in the not too distant future.